Blog Talk Radio.
Spirit Travels Radio. I'm Karen, and this is my dear friend and co-host, Bright Sun. Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
Oh, hi. I'm doing fair, thank you. How was your evening this evening?
It's been quiet.
Yeah.
It has.
I can share that with you. Yeah, it has. But here we are this evening, and we're both set and ready for a good, a very good program, and to introduce this gentleman.
Yes, and I will go ahead and tell everybody who that was. That is Ken Tucker. He is a country and blues singer. He will be joining us momentarily and to talk about his music. I think everybody's going to find him quite interesting. So, kind of bear with us. He's had to go pick up his fly from work, so he's going to make it about 15 to 20 minutes late into the show. So in the meantime, I'm going to play a couple more of his songs. He also has an interest in the paranormal, so that is a really interesting aspect of him. So he was telling me about some houses that, what was a house, or maybe it was a locate. I think it was a house that they lived in a long time ago. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. He can share some, does he take an interest like right there where he lives in Indiana? Does he know hauntings that, you know, you could look into, or?
There is some areas there that he told me about that seemed rather interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll ask him about that once we get him on air.
Okay.
So, anything new up your way, paranormal wise?
Just the one that I was telling you about last night about the singing in the James River that everyone has been hearing, and I know you told me that it's called a siren, and I've never been familiar with water spirits. I guess it's because we focus so much on the woods, the land, and everything. So I asked my son, you know, I even thought, well, that would be a nice drive tonight. And I thought, well, if I walk out there, I can't help but laugh, I'm sorry. If I walk out there by myself and I start hearing someone sing to me, I don't know whether to stand there or you know, just sit down and listen or what, but everyone's been hearing this, woman and men, couples, husbands, wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, brothers, sisters, you know, and they go, it's called College Creek, and it's off the Colonial Parkway, and you just pull in, and it's a little circle parking lot. It's well, not little, it's the right good size, and everyone will sit, and if you walk, Robert says if you walk to where you're knee high, that's when it starts. She has to know you're in the water. It's real, and I thought, well, I'm not going to walk in the water. He says it's sandy on the bottom. It's not rocky or hard or anything like that. And he says then that's when it starts. And people have literally sat there stunned and stood there, and there was some Mexican gentlemen that had swam out. The further they went, the more she sang. And they ran back out of the water going, Diablo, Diablo, Diablo in the water. Yeah.
Devil.
Yeah, that's what they were saying. And they were yelling. And Robert didn't have that fear. He kept walking out more because he wanted to hear her sing. And so I thought, why here? Why on this parkway? You know, where did she come from?
You know, it's with water spirits like that, it's just, you know, I've heard about them. I've never actually had to be told that someone's actually hearing this. I've only read about it. But what they do is they draw you into the water. And when they draw you into the water, it's drowned. So...
And those two were the furthest ones out.
Yeah. Did they realize what it was?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. And see, the Mayans and the Aztec people from Mexico, they're very spiritual, so they knew.
Mm-hmm.
And they swam as fast as they could and then ran the rest of the way out of the water. And they were yelling that, and Robert knew what they were saying, you know, and he went, you know, I want to hear her sing some more. So he kept walking out, and they were going, no, don't do that, you know. And he turned and he said, I don't have the fear. I'm not afraid of her. And they're going, no, Diablo, Diablo, no, no, in water, you know. And he was like, let me listen, and I'll come back out. I give you my word. I will. Nothing will happen to me. And he did. He came back out. He sat down. And he said, she can sing pretty. And he had Sarah with him, and, you know, it was like, Sarah said, she told me herself, she said, I just sat there. She said, you should have heard her. She was beautiful singing, but it was, she said it was eerie, like that. And I said, wow. And I said, so now there's something out there on the parkway. But my question is, where do they come from? Are they spirits that died in that water, or how do sirens get there?
You know, I'm not sure that, I'm not exactly sure how. I don't think they are human spirits. I believe that they are non-human spirits.
Okay.
And Ghostman in the chat room asked if they were negative or positive souls. They are actually negative souls. They will sing because they have this beautiful voice. And
mm-hmm.
then that draws, it's men. It's the men. Women usually don't go into the water. You know, they may hear it, but they, you know, which is rare. But
right.
the men are what they are drawing out to them. So Robert needs to not go back into the water because if he continues going, that's what they do. They draw you.
So they do they recognize him if they see him again? Are they under the water or above the water?
That is a question I cannot answer.
I wondered, you know, did they see him? You know, even though he couldn't see them or her, rather, not them, her, does she now recognize him if he comes and goes swimming there? Or is she under the water? I mean, to be singing, I think, you know, in my own self, wouldn't she have to be above water for everyone to hear her? Especially the gentleman that ran, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that spirit would have to come from above the water for everybody to hear, or the sound of the voice. But it's the drawing them out, and then, you know, it's to bring in more souls. They take a person, you know, and it's mainly men that they will pull in to that water, and for whatever reason, you know, it's always drowning. And is Ghostman asked if it was folklore. Yes, it is based on folklore, and this is the first time I've actually heard of it actually being heard and being done. So there may not be; it may be more truth than folklore.
My goodness, yes, because there's a lot of people that were on the beach numerous times. This has happened for Robert and Sarah. This has happened like 3 times already, and each time they go out there, she starts singing.
Yeah, she feels the spirit of the male souls, or the males that are there. So that's the reason why she does that. She's trying to draw them. And I can look it up real quick about sirens, but they are very, you want to avoid them. You don't want to go out into the water with them because with a siren, death is imminent.
Well, he needs to stay out of the water then out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he can swim in a pool, but not where she's. Where they are. I wonder if there's more than one.
There can be.
My goodness.
See,
it just started up this year. This never happened before.
Well, see, they're also now, I've got it pulled up. It's in Greek. It's Greek mythology. Sirens. They're also known. They're three dangerous bird women portrayed as seductress. They lure sailors with their music and voices to shipwreck on the coast of the island, or their island. Roman poets placed them on an island called Serenium Scopuli. Hey, excuse me for not being able to pronounce that right, but it's in some later rationalized traditions. The literal geographic of the flowery island of Anthemosa, or Anthemusa, is fixed, sometimes on Cape Pelorium. So they actually, all such locations were surrounded by cliffs and rocks. So that's another thing. Are there any rocks and cliffs around that area?
Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, yes. Big ones, too. Big cliffs where way up high. In fact, right where she sings, there's a ravine, and it goes way up. And there's a house that sits on the ravine that either a doctor or a lawyer, somebody wealthy, built. And it's way up. You look way up, and it's way up on top. And they've got a pier. I guess they walk down to the pier, and the pier stretches out where they can take their boat and go out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it says on here, in one of the stories about them, they said that the sirens were given parentage. They were considered the daughters of the river god, Achilles. But Helen, in her anguish, calls upon winged maidens, daughters of the earth. And although they lured mariners for the Greeks, the sirens in their meadow, starred with flowers, were not sea deities. So, you know, they're very mysterious, but there's a lot of folklore that goes along with it. But I would love to be able to drive up there and just go out and see if I can hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but you have to be very careful when you're dealing with something like that, because they do lure people to their deaths, and that's what they're all about.
I'll be. And see, Sarah said she stayed in the sand. She didn't go out in the water. She just sat at the edge and listened. And she said it was creepy. That's how she described it to me. She said it was really creepy. She said I got scared.
See, she was able to feel what they were. That's the reason why it scared her. The man, on the other hand, you know, they were, oh, wow, you know, there's this woman in the water. She's singing. We need to go find her. That's what they prey on, is that, because they want that male contact, I guess, is how you could say. But they're not really good, because they, like I said, they cause death. You know, there's it talks about in the Greek mythology of how women, how these sailors would crash, and some of them that died, you know, the ones that survived it talked about hearing the female voice, you know, the song. So they were luring them to them. They were beckoning them to them.
Wow. That is something. And see, Robert has no fear of her, and that's what worries me. He doesn't have any fear of the paranormal at all anyway, but he has no fear of her out there in the water. He
right.
wants to hear her sing.
Yeah, he doesn't need to be there.
Mm-mm. No, he does not. And he said that she only sings. Now, I asked him, I said, does she sing continuously? And Sarah answered that for me. Sarah said, no. She said, we can be there an hour or so. Robert will go out in the water for a swim, and then all of a sudden you'll start hearing her sing.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll sing. I said, how long does she sing? And Sarah answered me again, because they were in the yard here. And Sarah said she sings almost close to about 30 minutes or so. And I said, wow. I said, you know what? I'd like to go out there, park the truck, and just walk to the edge of the water and see if I could hear any thing like that, you know, because the gentlemen that ran out were yelling to everybody else, you know, don't go in the water. They knew, you know, and they were yelling, Diablo, Diablo, water, water, no, no, no swim, you know. And Robert, of course, you know, knowing what they were saying, it sparked his curiosity.
Fantastic,
yeah.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Oh no, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, so that's the newest, you know, like thing. I mean, and it's weird because in all the years I've lived here, we've never had a siren in the waters here until this year. It's strange. So I asked, where did she come from?
Yeah, the water spirits like that, if it's not, which Ghostman just made a comment that makes sense. It could be that there was a drowning, you know, and maybe it's the voice of a female that drowned in the waters. But if it's a siren, then, you know, these water deities, they can go wherever they want. I mean, they can travel. So, you know, there's something about that water, and that's the reason why they're there. But what he may be thinking is one woman, he could be actually hearing the three, and it could be at different times, and it's just a different one. So they're beckoning them into the water because, and it doesn't matter who it is, really, you know, as long as it's a male. And that's what they look for. They look for the souls of a male victim.
Now, there was a drowning about 2 to 3 years ago, and it was a little girl. I believe she was 8 or 9 years old, and her family had went to College Creek to sun for the day, and I don't know why she got that far out, but she did, and James City County, York County, paramedics worked on her and worked on her. They did get her out of the water. They worked on her, but it was too late, you know. They did everything they could, but they couldn't bring her back.
Aw, that's sad. I hate that. You know, and there's a possibility it's her that they hear, you know, depends on what her nature was. But, you know, the singing, I think that needs to be, I don't quite know how you conduct an investigation near the water or on the water, but I think that it might be something to consider,
mm-hmm.
minus the male presence there, because
exactly.
If it's a siren, then there's danger for any male that's there.
See, that makes me curious tonight enough to wonder if you go continually down the parkway and park in different sections, because they do have parking in different areas. The water goes all the way around the Jamestown Island, all the way around where Pocahontas, you know, played and canoed along the Powhatan Creek. The Powhatan Creek opens up into the James River. So I'm wondering if, like you said, there's more than one, if they're in different places along that stretch.
It's possible, but usually a siren, it would be three together.
Oh, okay. Okay, I follow you.
It makes for a definite, interesting conversation. And, you know, and this just piques my interest, too, because, you know, I've not heard, the only thing I've ever done is read about it. You know, I've read about it, and it's like, it's fascinating to hear the stories, and knowing that it's a Greek mythology, you know, and then all the other spirits that were water deities that were, you know, but to hear it actually happening.
Yeah, and the thing that's interesting is, even the little girl that drowned, that was three to 4 years ago, so... Why now? Why would she start singing after all these years? You know, and if it were a siren, where did it come from after, you know, because like I said, we've been here all 23 years now, and no one ever heard this until this summer.
That's interesting.
Yeah, where did she come from?
You know, what's to say that this didn't have something to do? I mean, we were talking, remember, about the bridge and the crashes.
Yeah.
What if that had to do with that? What if whatever it was that caused those wrecks, because of the one man saying, I saw what he saw.
Exactly.
Maybe it was a female spirit that he saw and was in the road, and he was trying to avoid hitting her. And maybe that's what all that connection is, because that's all right in the same area, is it not?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's not that. It's not. In fact, that particular water goes right, actually past us, where I live, into the open, huge, there's two reservoirs on each side of the highway. So there's only a two-lane highway. There's one reservoir that comes up by us and has ponds and creeks. The other side, on the other side of the highway, there's where it opens up to the James River.
Mm-hmm.
That water goes right out to the James River, and that's where it stretches along the parkway.
Mm-hmm. And so that's got a lot of history there because of the old shipwrecks and the pirates.
Exactly, the ghost fleet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, all them ships that are ghost fleet ships, and they're haunted.
I have definitely got to drive up there soon.
Yeah, that would... Well, that would be nice. I'd enjoy going out there with you. That'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be awesome. You know, and you know that the James River, well, that's the York River. The York River opens up into the Chesapeake Bay, and that's where the York River goes straight up into Old House Woods. So see, there every
Another
both
connection.
Rivers, they, yeah, both rivers are connected to something.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of pirates that would go into where, to the bay where Old House Woods is too.
Yes.
So, and see that peak. That's another thing. And I've thought about this. I doubt that they've done any real research on any possible burials on the land, other than they know that there are children buried in the yard where the house is.
Exactly.
So, what's to say that there's not pirates have been buried there? What's to say that there wasn't some big, huge mutiny standoff with, you know, with some of the others, which is a lot of bloodshed.
I agree. Mm-hmm. And I would think so, too. Now, Robert told me many times when he took a walk from the woods right out to where the ships would come near ashore, he said there were many times that he felt the pirates' presence. And he would actually sit down and he would hear the clanging, and they would literally, he said, I know they sat down beside me. And he said, and of course, he's fearless, he has no fear, so he just sits there and he talks to them, you know, and he actually, you know, he built like a small little fire out there on the sand and lit it just enough, and he said within just minutes they were like around the fire and he could feel them, and
mm-hmm.
it was like he had done something that they enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
and you know, and he knew that there were pirates around them, you know, just like when out here at the woods when he made the campfire, he said that he felt that the warriors' presence, because he heard his breastplate, his bone plate, you know, jangling, and he said he did something that the warrior hadn't seen in what, hundreds and hundreds of years, and he actually felt his moccasins and everything sit right down beside him.
Oh,
and
wow.
Robert has no fear of these things, and he'll sit right down and talk to him, you know, and try to communicate with him by the fire, you know.
Yeah.
And he loves it. He loves sitting out there talking to him. But
mm-hmm.
he said there's one warrior out there that seems to wait for him to come out there and start a fire, because that's something he can relate to, is that fire.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just like the pirates. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know. He tests his fate, but every time it seems as if they feel his spirit, and his spirit is good, so that they do not fear him either. They
mm-hmm.
they relate to him very, very closely.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think with doing paranormal investigating, you have to relate with the spirits. You know, you have to be understanding to them, because, you know, we don't know what their lives were. We don't know how they lived. What they may have gone through, and I think that's good that he has an understanding of them to the point that he's able to feel them when they're there.
Yeah,
of course, you know, I'm able to feel them as well when we do investigations.
Yeah.
And right. There was one in particular, which I've talked about this many times, but we were doing an investigation, and I was able to feel this spirit. And I knew the spirit knew that I knew it was there, and I don't know how to explain that, but I knew it knew.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I'll say he knew. But to me, it was almost like someone was playing, and I wouldn't say it was a child, but, you know, like a person that was behind a tree. They were looking out from behind a tree, and that was what I gathered from the contact with this spirit.
Right.
But, you know, he didn't want us there. Doesn't want us there. I don't know what his reason was. There was a lot of history to this location. It's a private home. But I felt his anger, and that was the first time I had ever felt anger from a spirit, you know, because
right.
I've only been doing this for 4 years. So, you know, being out in it's different than just having, when you're out looking for it, there's a difference between having that occasional experience with it, because when you're out there, you know, you're looking for it, and they know to look for you.
Right.
So, and that one in particular, I have kind of kept that to heart, because, you know, I just knew at that point, you know, although we're out there looking for them, and we are helping our clients and trying to make, you know, things better for them by going in and finding out what's in their home, and find ways to move them from their homes. You have to be aware that they know you. And
right.
that's for the paranormal investigator. And some people, they seek out because they're sensitive. So, yeah, that's one thing to keep in mind. And I've never felt anything like that before, you know. So that's still kind of, I have to say, messes with my head. Because
yeah.
it was so different. But it was a good experience, too, all at the same time.
Yeah. I know the other day Robert and I experienced something. We were both in the truck, and I was coming up the side street where I live, and I happened to look up on one of the large, large electrical lines. It's a cement pole. They put it up about a year, 2 years ago, and I looked up, and I saw this huge. At first I had to look, because I said, "What is that?" You know. And Robert said, "What?" I said, "Look." And I pointed up. I said, "Look up there." I said that it's huge. And I said, "It's not an eagle, because it's way too big to be an eagle."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "It's not a golden eagle, because it's way too large to be a golden eagle. It's sure not a buzzard, because I've seen buzzards sit in my neighbor's trees, and I know what buzzards look like." And Robert went, "Mom, that thing's big." And I said, "I know, it was solid black, but it kept turning its head toward us because we were sitting." I actually put the truck in park. And I put it in park and sat there. And I said, "This is in broad daylight now." And I sat there and I said, "Robert, that thing is really big, really too big to be a bird. It's not a bird."
Mothman, maybe?
That's exactly what I said to Robert. I said, "Robert, it looks like Mothman." And he said, "It does. It's just that I can't get close enough. If I were to walk out there," which he could have, because that's where the whole forest and his campsites and everything are. And he said I could walk up to the opening of the whole continuous woods out there. He said, but I said to him, "Well, he'd fly. You'd get to see him fly if he flies." And he'd say, "Yeah, but I don't want to do that." He'd say, he's comfortable. You can see that, but he's turning and looking at us because we're staring at him. And I said, "I can't help it. I spotted it." And he said, "I know." He said, "But it's huge." And I said, "Yeah, That's why I know it's not a bird, because the only bird big enough to be like that is the albatross, which circles the seas. My father was in the military when the albatross used to fly around the aircraft carriers, and that's the largest bird compared to the eagle. But this is not albatross area. They fly in open oceans. We don't have open oceans here, except Virginia Beach, which is 50 miles from here. So I didn't know what to think of it. And it continued to sit there, and I came home. And I said, I'm leaving it alone. It's at peace. I'm leaving it, whatever it is, I'm leaving it alone. And I did, and I left it alone. I left it at its peace, but it got Robert's curiosity, but he did leave it alone. He said, I will not go near it. He said, I will not invade its space. And I said, that's good. And
right.
Now I look up all the time, you know, looking for it, and it's not there, so it's in the trees somewhere. And then Robert said to me, that's the noise and the screams I've heard. And I said, screams? And he said, yeah, different night sounds. He said, it's like a scream out of the woods. And I said, huh. He said, no, I'm not going in there, because he said, you know, I may have a kindred spirit with the copperhead snake, but I sure don't have one with the eastern diamondback rattler. And he said, and I'm not going to get bit by a rattler. So, you know, he has a kindred spirit with the copperhead, but not with a rattler. The snakes this year are plentiful, and he's not going to test his fate when it comes to that, especially at night.
Right. So. You know, I was discussing Mothman when my team went there. It's been a couple of years to Point Pleasant. The first thing that I had to do, and I was lucky, one of my teammates, which happens to be Chris Dedman, I had told him about wanting to go see Cornstalk's grave, Chief Cornstalk.
Right.
And I was drawn to it. I had to go. I mean, there was nothing but, you know, because I figured that if we didn't go as a team, that I was going to locate his burial site, and I was going to go visit his burial site while I was there. Well, we all left, and we were going out around, and Chris made, you know, we went to where Chief Cornstalk was buried, and I have a picture. Now, we're not big about orbs. We do not use those as evidence because, you know, they're kind of hard to determine.
Right.
But I have a picture of one of the former group members standing beside his headstone, and there is this big old orb, just huge orb, out beside him. And when I took the picture, I saw it. I turned to one of my other teammates, and I showed them the picture, and they thought it was pretty neat. I was the only one that had got that picture. Nobody else got one with an orb with it. Just me.
Right.
And I told him, I said, Chief Cornstalk come out to say hello.
Yes, he did.
And I was satisfied with that. I was satisfied. I've not had the urge to go back. I just felt that I needed to come there, and I needed to tell him that I had come to pay my respects to him. And I'd done just that.
Yep.
But the investigation of Mothman was very interesting, because we went to the TNT area. Now, mind you, they are military bunkers all over this land. It's huge. It's a huge area.
Uh-huh.
And there are bunkers out there. Some of them are still being used.
Right.
We have heard stories about people that have gone out there, and they've had vehicles with armed military come out there and make them leave.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we didn't run into them. We were there for probably 2 or 3 hours and saw nobody. But the water is big, huge area of water. It's just kind of split up, but it's stagnated water. It's just bad.
Right.
But the TNT, there was a building on further back, and it was a ammunition plant.
Right.
So, but what people, I don't think some people realize is this was built on top of a Native American burial ground, and there's stories about getting pictures where you can see the spirits of natives out there. And I got sick. We were out there, and I was just so sick. I just felt so bad. But what I had done going into Point Pleasant, I had, at the time, the car I had a little cassette player, and I had a native flute and drums. Very pretty. I've still got it, but I can't listen to it now because my new car is different. But anyway, I played that 2 hours going in before I got to Point Pleasant. I was playing that all the way. It's just something, just I had to put it in. So I played it all the way into Point Pleasant. When we were going out to the TNT area the next day, I put it in. I had to play it. And I guess I wanted to be ready. I wanted them to know that I was coming. And then I was playing this music, and it was for them. But leaving Point Pleasant was the hard part for me because I got sick. I walked into a store, and this man stood there, and he said, "Oh, my God." He said, "Where have you been?" I told him I was out at TNT. And he literally tells me, he said, "You need to go in." He said, "Go into," because they had a freezer, of course. You got to remember, I'm a redhead. I'm light-skinned. I'm freckled. I burn. My face will burn, but I don't burn that bad.
Right.
But I was red-faced, and he had me go into, of all places, the cooler and stand, because he was afraid that I was going to pass out.
Yeah.
And I was just so sick to my stomach, I could not stand it. Well, and you remember me telling you about this. This was probably about 2 weeks after we went out there. I had a dream about TNT area and Mothman, right. And I could hear screams.
Screams.
I was there. I don't know what I was. I know I was running. I knew I had to get out. Whatever was there did not want me there. It didn't want nobody there.
Right.
And I've not been back.
No.
I won't go back. I've been through West Virginia. I've been past the bridges to go over into Point Pleasant. But I won't make that turn to go into Point Pleasant. It's bad vibes for me. I just get this bad feeling. And it's a beautiful town.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say, isn't it a real pretty town? I know on the movie it showed it as a quaint little place.
It is, but there's something bad. I just feel something bad there, and I didn't like the way it felt, you know, because I was sick. I had to stop three times before I got out of Point Pleasant, and I was so glad to get across that bridge.
Right.
And back over to head home. And I mean, I didn't stop. So, yeah, there's something definitely bad about that area. And the people are nice. Everybody there's nice. They're good people.
Yeah.
But
right.
There's something on that in that area that's just not good news. And
right.
I just don't, you know, and then later on, what former teammate, the same one that I had the picture of, was going back for an event. I told him plain, don't go.
Don't go. Right.
And he said, "Oh, it'll be okay." I said, "No, it won't. Something bad's going to happen. Don't go." Well, he went. And he was sick. He ended up sick. Bad sick from it. Was so sick. I think he was like a week. He got there and he was like there for 24 hours and then he was sick. And I told him, I said, "You should have listened to me. I told you not to go." Because I knew something was going to happen. But you know what? But it just, you know, I don't plan on going back to Point Pleasant. If by chance I did, it would have to be something major for me to go back.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no intentions of going back there. I mean, we stayed at the Low Hotel. That place is absolutely gorgeous. It's old, and it sits right near, just within walking distance of where the Silver Bridge is.
Wow.
And we walked down to where the bridge was, and you could actually see one of the concrete columns that was left on the opposite side of the bridge from
right.
where the bridge stood. But you get a real sad feeling, you know, because not everybody that drowned there when that happened were found. There are still people
right.
that went down with that bridge, and they've never found them to this day.
Never found them, that's right.
But that has, that the water is, it's kind of a swift type water. You don't look it on top when you're standing there, but it's swift. The undertow and everything is pretty strong.
Right.
So.
And where was Mothman's last sighting? I know that somebody said to me one time it was the Blue Ridge Mountains, but I never heard after that where its last sighting was.
The last one that I heard was at during 9/11, right before.
In New York.
Mm-hmm.
So it was around Manhattan when that happened.
Mm-hmm. And also the
there.
Yep.
Right.
And the Haitian earthquake.
And but there's been no sighting since?
Not that I'm aware of.
I know, because my son said that he's an entity of the planet, so he hides where he feels safe.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what I saw and Robert saw up on that pole, then he would be safe back there, because he would know that there's two campsites back there and they're safe, they're out of the way, and no one knows where they are except for him, and it would be a safe place for him to be without being bothered.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have a caller.
Oh.
So I think we're going to bring our call. Well, we did have a caller.
Okay.
I guess they decided they were going to hang up when I noticed they were on.
Aww.
But that's okay. If you're still listening, you can dial back in to listen, and I won't bring you on if you don't want to be brought on. But yeah, the Mothman, that's a very interesting thing for me, because I started doing a lot of research about it, and I found that during that time, of course, everybody knows, you know, there were UFO sightings when he was out there, or when mm-hmm. during the time that he was seen. There were also animal mutilations, which I found to be a kind of a connection with him, because I was doing some more research, and I found that there was an earthquake in Mexico, or New Mexico.
Right.
And during that time, that was where there was cattle mutilations. And they talked about possibly UFO sightings and so forth. Now, the
mm-hmm.
thing about the cattle mutilations is I was watching something, it's been a while back, it's been several months that I saw this, but there's a location in Dulce, New Mexico, that is considered, well, they believe to be an underground military
yep.
base.
Yep.
There are pictures.
Yep.
And when they did these pictures, my mouth literally dropped, because they
yep.
showed these cows that had gone through the mutilation, but what was in it, they said they think that it was harvesting embryos, because there was one left, and what was in there wasn't a cow. I mean, it didn't have the shape of a cow, but it had the shape of a human head. It had
right.
the mouth, it had the nose, the eyes, the ears, but it was covered in hair.
Oh, my goodness. It just gives me, that kind of gives me chills, you know.
Yeah, oh, I know.
Think. And, you know, I mean, and yet, you know, there are those that take a very, like George Tsoukalos, take a very deep, as a scientist, a very deep interest in ancient aliens and what mark they have left in their drawings and the crops and in Mexico, where the, you know, where everything aligns with Ryan's belt and the pyramids. In fact, my son was just looking at that before he went out, and he takes a deep interest in it, because it, you know, Mothman being an entity of the planet, you know, it's not just us that he circles around, you know, and he's been here for thousands of years, thousands, not hundreds, thousands, and remains as he is. And when I looked up on that pole that day, he was so it was so large, it covered the whole length of the pole, and I thought, that is no bird, you know. And I sat there. I couldn't help it. I didn't mean to invade its privacy, but I was in shock at the size. And I said to Robert, that's not even a golden eagle, you know. That it's way too large. And he said, no, Mom, but you know, I'm not going to bother him. He's at peace. And I said,
right.
No, he's not. He's looking at us, you know. And I said, and we need to leave. You know, we need to leave him alone, because he kept turning and looking as if to say, go away.
It wasn't meant for you to see him. It was, but it wasn't. Not in the sense that he was, you know, what he represents.
Right.
You know, so I think y'all done the right thing by leaving. But,
yeah,
you know, Mothman in reality is reportedly 7 to 8 foot in height.
Wow.
So he's big. But at the time that he was first seen in Point Pleasant, they said, okay, this is a crane that's a little bit bigger than what it's supposed to be. But yet this thing had red eyes.
Yep.
And, what they think, and which this I don't follow with this, because I feel the same way. I think he's as old as the earth, and he's been here thousands of years, and we're to not understand him. You know, we're not to follow him. We're not to search for him, because that's not good news.
No.
So they think that some of the theory is that he was something that came from that TNT area where that ammunition plant was, but I don't think that's what that was. I think he came up out of that. So
that is something. And now when I come up the street, I glance, you know, to look up real quick and see if what I saw is there. And the last 2 days it hasn't been, but the day before it was. And I thought to myself, and then that's when Robert said, maybe those are the screams I've been hearing. And I said, and maybe that's why the owls have come in closer. Like I've never had an owl in my magnolia tree, never. I've had a hawk, but not an owl. Now I have an owl at night, and every night he hoots. And Robert came up into the house the other night, and he said, Mom, we got an owl in our yard. He's sitting in the yard. I said, Robert, he's not sitting in the yard. Owls don't sit on the ground. And he said, no, I didn't mean that. He's on the second or third branch of the magnolia tree, and he's sitting there. I saw him. And he said, we've never had an owl in that tree. And I said, I know. I said, the owls have moved in closer, you know, to people's high trees, like the pine tree and everything, as if just to come in closer and get away from the woods out there, strangely enough. And now I have an owl in my tree at night, and he's beautiful to listen to, but see, I never had an owl in 23 years in my tree either. So it tells me there's something out there pushing the owls or the other, whatever, you know, closer in, as if they're coming in for safety.
Yeah, I think so too. And they feel more at ease, you know, not in the woods.
Right.
So, yeah, and whatever that is taking up residence out there. And I think it would be safe to not go into the woods after dark.
No, Robert hasn't gone back there. In fact, he hasn't gone back there during the day either. Once he saw that, he said, "Uh-oh." He said, "I'm not going back there, especially by myself." He said, "I, I have this strange inner gut feeling. And I said, well, I said, that might explain why all the owls are moving in closer to the houses and getting up into the highest trees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, my magnolia tree is thick, so he can sit inside the tree and hoot all night, you know.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's odd because I have magnolia trees here in the backyard. We actually have 12 behind the house.
Wow.
Yeah. I love them. They're so big.
Yeah. They are. They're big and they're thick and they're protective. Even in a rainstorm, you could sit underneath a magnolia tree and not get wet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. It took me a little bit to figure out what type of tree is because I know what a pine tree is. I know what a maple tree is. You know, there's certain trees I know, but then there's a lot that I don't know. And my neighbor, when they moved in next door, you know, she was telling me that's a magnolia. And I said, okay. So I thought that was pretty neat that we had magnolias out here.
Yeah, they're beautiful, and they're thick and protective. And I'm so glad to have one straight in the dab in my yard. But I've got squirrels, rabbits, raccoon, a possum, a skunk. They all say, my other neighbors call it Walmart.
Oh, my gosh. You know, you mentioned the skunk, and I've got to share this. Of course, you know that I lost a friend of mine just a few months ago. It was really heartbreaking. Can you take over for just a moment and talk?
Oh, sure.
Okay, I'll be right back to you.
Okay, all right. Well, Karen is gone. We'll discuss the wildlife that surrounds us on Mother Earth. In our culture, the American Indian culture, each animal is basically has a name. Just like the deer, we call the deer the pathwalker of the forest. The hawk is the one bird that is sacred and brings the answers from the Creator when we pray and we ask the Creator for guidance to lead us in the right direction in the paths. The eagle is the highest flying bird that takes our hopes and our prayers to the Creator, the hawk bringing the answer back. And there are many animals that are out there, our four-legged brothers and sisters that are there to guide us, to give us messages. You're there, Karen?
I'm here. That was okay. Ken. He called me on my home phone, and I'm getting ready to add him on.
Okay.
So we'll go ahead and bring him in. But we're going to sit and have a talk about all this one day because you know so much, and I think it would be great to share with everybody.
Thank you. That's sweet, but so do you. I mean, this is something Karen and I share together, sisterhood. We share the love of Mother Earth and what all our standing brothers and sisters and our four-legged brothers and sisters mean.
Exactly. I'm hoping that this call will go through. Hi, Ken.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Right.
We were wondering where you were.
I had to change the speakers to the headset.
Oh, wow. So, how have you been doing this evening?
Well, all right. Doing fine.
Mm. Well, do you want to tell us a little about, tell everybody a little bit about yourself and what you do and how you got started in the music?
Oh, I'm live now?
You are live now.
Oh, I'm done. I was eating a peanut butter sandwich, so that's... well, as far as being in the music business, I mean, that's not necessarily an instantaneous event. That's kind of a gradual progression, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I started playing guitar around maybe 10 years old, 11 years old, something like that. And used a borrowed guitar to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And as the time went on, I got my own instrument, of course, and I learned how to play bits and pieces of songs. Excuse me, I got allergies too, so if you hear me cough or sneeze, I beg your forgiveness. But as, you know, as time progressed, you know, like anything else you do, you learn and you practice and you get better. And eventually I started playing in bands, and some of them good, some of them not. But what my whole philosophy is, I wanted to do this for a living.
Mm-hmm.
As more than a hobby in my mind. It was something that was very captivating, and this is really something that I wanted to pursue. So I was proactive about things. I didn't wait for opportunities. I went to make opportunities. And as time went on, you know, I met certain people, one of which was Larry Norman, and I got to play for him for 3 years. And Larry was an innovator in the gospel music field. He was the pretty much the originator of contemporary Christian music. And I was a fan of his growing up. He was on Capitol Records. He was knew the Beatles, knew Bob Dylan. He knew, used to open for the Doors and Janis Joplin. And so meeting him and getting to play for him was a big step. And he was one of those gentlemen who was just a sweet, sweet man. And one thing I liked about him was, let me forget, he was famous when I was around him. It was like being around, you know, a goofy uncle. But I've you know, this career I have had has been a roller coaster. There's times when I'm just so busy I catch myself coming and going, and other times it's just pretty dry, you know.
Right.
It's like any other business. Yeah, you got to make the work happen. And the way to make it happen is to make sure when you play well and you're professional on every level, that you don't act like an idiot. Because you can be a great musician, but if you're a moron, no one's going to want to work with you.
That's true.
And so you got to find and you got to find your audience. I mean, what I do is a kind of a niche market. You know, it's even though it's well, it's the music I play is kind of considered crossover type of music. I mean, it work in, I play blues, but it works on rock and roll, and it works in certain country arenas and folk. But it's still considered a niche, you know, like this a niche market. So you know, it's hard to go into town, especially small Midwestern towns, where they want to hear the new Kid Rock song, or they want to hear Lynyrd Skynyrd, or they want to hear country or hip hop, you know. They don't want to hear Freddie King or Howlin' Wolf or Willie Dixon
or Buddy Guy.
What, I can't forget Buddy Guy, and Buddy is the bomb, dude. Buddy is the bomb.
We love him.
Yeah.
His new Have song that came out is great.
Everything he does is great. Buddy is just one of those guys that I don't think he can put out a bad song. I think it's impossible.
That's right.
Would you like to share some of your music? Would you mind singing with us?
Sure, I'll play
singing
some.
For us, I should say. I won't sing.
Let me go ahead and get my guitar out of the case.
Okay.
You know, that's just how it's been today. I mean, I came in here knowing that I was going to play, And I walked right by my guitar and left it in the case.
It's been one of those days. It really has. I've been sitting here waiting for the maintenance man to come and do some work on my home, but I haven't seen them. I don't know if they'll ever show up.
Okay. Do we do an original or a cover?
You could do an original if you like.
I see the microphone on my guitar here.
Okay.
It's near. I'm going to try my tune. Yes. I'm trying to think what I want to do to those. See, I'll do it. Do you want something slow or something upbeat?
Do an upbeat song. You can do one of each if you like.
Okay. Let me see. Let me try this one here. I'll do One Stop Man for you. That's one that everybody likes, and I play on all the shows.
Okay.
A song about my wife.
Oh.
That's a love song I wrote for.
Aw.
Actually, I give her credit for writing the last verse because I couldn't think of the last verse I wanted. And I said, you know, can you think of something? It's called One Stop Man. She goes, write something about a gas station because they're one stops. And so I said, well, I'll write something, but I'll give you credit for it. And so I wrote it down and showed it to her. She goes, I don't want credit for this. And so she gives me evil eye every time I sing this, but I'm going to do it anyway. One Stop Man. If you want some love, baby, look at me. I got everything you need, cause I'm your one-stop man. I'm your one-stop man. No shopping, no help, baby, I'm your one-stop man. If you want romance, baby, look my way. I got games we both can play, cause I'm your one-stop man. I'm your one-stop man.
Try to plug in the other one as fast as I can.
Okay.
All right, I'll try to do that very quickly. I'll be back with you.
What are we waiting for?
No, you go ahead and play. I'm going to plug in another phone as fast as I can. I'll be back.
Okay. I'll bring you straight on when you come back
okay.
in.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Well, why don't we hear the next one, because I'm enjoying this.
Sure. This is for what?
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure I'm in tune. I'm having a little trouble with tune, the humidity. Humidity is really... Here, that's what's got. Heavy fix there. I got to tune that up. This one was out. It's called Sunny.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It may be sunny outside, but I'm walking in the rain. Maybe it's sunny outside, but I'm walking in the rain. Since you put me down, babe, my life's gone down the drain. And maybe you're outside, the clouds hang over me. Maybe clear outside, the clouds hang over me. Can't seem to shake your evil memory.
Have you back on with us.
Oh, good. I worked as fast as I could. I'm back.
That's good. Well, I'm glad to hear you back.
Oh, thank you. I was, when I heard it beeping, I went, oh, no. But I thank goodness I have a spare phone I can plug in as quick as I can. But that was beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I played Brother Whiskey as the opening song.
Oh, really?
When we first started, yeah.
I love that song.
I wrote that sitting at a little cafe in my hometown, just smoking a cigarette and eating a donut, I think. And those words just kind of dropped in my head, so I started writing it down.
Who, may I ask? I'm wondering when you entered the music world in your, you know, a long time ago. Who in the country rock and roll blues? I say blues in a because my son loves the blues music. He takes a deep interest in the Robert Johnson era when he got into blues and became a great guitarist. And who did you look up to when you first started writing and everything? Who was someone that you took a deep interest music wise?
Well, let me move my microphone a little closer here. As far as music influence, musical influence from myself, that's a big question. I started out really being a Beatles fanatic.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I still am. I still think the Beatles are the one of the most influential, which is obvious, but one of the most creative writing, songwriting groups there are. I mean, they didn't have really, honestly, when they were recording, they didn't have that much recording equipment. I mean, it was just really old-fashioned recording. You know,
right.
It was all reel-to-reel, and they only had 4 tracks to use. They didn't have, like, today you can put, like, 50 or 60 tracks on the song.
Right.
They had to bounce around 4 tracks. And that what they did with those four tracks just was mesmerizing. And today it's still
right.
fresh, and it's not something that's, you know, you can point your finger and say, well, that's from this era of time, because it was so beyond their time. They were so far beyond their time that it's timeless.
Right.
But some of my early influences were the Beatles, of course, Jimi Hendrix. There's a couple local
oh,
guys
my.
I grew up with. Tracy Garcia, who's on my last CD, and Jim Ciprotti, who taught me how to write songs.
Right.
Tracy Garcia taught me a lot about guitar playing. He's a phenomenal, amazing guitar player.
Right.
And Jim Ciprotti taught me a lot about songwriting and taught me how to appreciate different musical styles. He got me into he was really into Harry Chapin and Neil Diamond, and he got me into those
yeah.
gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
And when my dad took me to see the Blues Brothers movie, that was the first time I ever heard real blues music.
Wow.
And the first song I heard was She Called the Katie, which is the first song you hear in the Blues Brothers movie
mm-hmm.
as Julia Jake is leaving prison and they're going on their way.
Right.
That song's called She Called the Katie. And it's written by an Indianapolis blues man named Yank Rochelle. And Taj Mahal made it famous. And then the Blues Brothers, of course, redid it. But when it comes to blues, you mentioned Robert Johnson. Of course, Robert Johnson
yes.
influences everybody.
Yeah.
My first blues record was by a gentleman named Lightnin' Hopkins, who was a
mm-hmm.
Delta player.
Mm-hmm.
I think, well, he was a Texas blues guy. He was more a Texas blues guy.
Right.
But that was my introduction into hardcore blues, and I just love that record.
Right.
And my brother couldn't understand. You know, it's like, there's no drums or bass on it, and there's just an old man with a guitar playing. I said, well, that's the beauty of it. It's stripped down. It's the essence of the music. It's the essence of someone burying their very... soul on vinyl, you know, it's nude, it's naked music.
Right. It gets right down to the very soul of you, because I know that when my son is home, he loves to listen to Buddy Guy, B.B. King, Eric Clapton, Jimi Hendrix, he'll turn on Robert Johnson sometimes, and you know, and then my mind goes back to when, you know, of course, as you know, the story of Robert Johnson going to the
yeah.
crossroads, you know, and but he loves the blues, and he could listen to it all night, you know, but then he also has a love of when you said Lynyrd Skynyrd earlier, you know, he loves Lynyrd Skynyrd 38 Special. Rock and roll, southern rock and roll, you know, it southern rock, you know, it, because you know we are from the south, and he goes in different directions, but most people that are you know would look at a young man of his age and go, my goodness, I mean his love of the blues is really awesome, because that's what he plays a lot, and that's how I became familiar, just listening to Buddy Guy, you know, and I really enjoyed it. And then he was on David Letterman about in the early spring. He was on, and David Letterman had him on singing Skin Deep, and I just sat there mesmerized, because I said, wow, so this is who you love, you know, and it put the picture, you know, the face to the music, and now when he's at home and he plays it, I listen, you know, and so he's old school. He'll go way back to Johnny Cash. He even has Johnny Cash T-shirts. You know, he loves Johnny Cash and Hank Williams and Hank Williams Jr. of course, and it goes on and on. So that's why I asked that question, because I I was just, you know, wondering who you look, you know, who you took the more like, you know, the looked up to, or, you know, someone that you admired that you thought you kind of followed in a sense, you know.
Well, pretty much anyone who I enjoy influences me. I mean, any musician who I think is, you know, even if I really don't like the music, if I think that they're good, even though I don't like them musically, I mean, they can have an influence on me. Like you mentioned, now Buddy Guy's a Chicago blues guy,
right?
And Robert Johnson was there's a difference in the style, you know, of course, but
yes,
you know,
there is,
because you'll hear Delta stuff sounds like
right.
That's kind of Delta stuff in here.
And there was Stevie Ray Vaughan.
That's Texas blues, yeah. That's got a little bit of swing in it, you know. It's got the.
Yeah.
D.C. Ray has like a. I mean, there's, you know, there's a, even in blues, there are differences.
Yeah.
I mean, and then, of course, the Chicago blues basically is Delta blues that's electrified a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because they went from, you know, a lot of the blues players moved from Mississippi and Louisiana and the Delta there, Memphis, went up to Chicago to work in the steel mills.
Right.
Back in the 40s and so on. They brought the music with them, and they electrified it. And, of
wow.
course, guys like Leonard Chess started Chess Records and made them famous. You know, guys like Chuck Berry and Muddy Waters, and, of course, Willie Dixon was
Muddy
there.
Waters.
And, and Howlin' Wolf and Etta James and so on. They were all part of Chess Records, you know.
Yeah.
And then they got the Chicago Blues kind of has this thing. So, I mean, there's just such a big variety. Now, what I play, I just mix everything I like together into one kind of big soup. And I like mixing Delta and Chicago style with some Texas style
right.
maybe a little Piedmont every now and then. But I just love the blues because the simplicity is just absolutely mesmerizing. You know, and people think, well, blues is easy to play, which is absolutely not true. One of the hardest things I found to do is learning how to simplify my playing.
It is. But, it is hard. It is.
And learning how to choose your notes and
mm-hmm.
choose when to be quiet and when to make a noise.
Right.
And there's also the whole issue of the groove of it. I mean, it's beyond rhythm, and it's beyond simple beat. There's an actual, I almost think it's a tangible groove to true blues music that just can't be, it just can't be denied.
Right. You're very right there, because I had watched a special with my son, Stevie Ray Vaughan. They had filmed it, and this was long after he passed, and he gave each and every blues artist, he gave an example of their different techniques of playing, of their different sounds. He said, now Eric Clapton might play it this way, you know, B.B. King might play it this way, you know, I play it this way, and he did exactly what you just did, you know, and it was very interesting. And my son takes a deep interest in the legendary Stevie Ray Vaughan and his music, and he'll play him at many times in the house when, you know, he's listening to his music and so on. So I just think that's really neat.
I think so too. Would you want to play another song? Because everybody in the chat room is enjoying it. They really are.
Sure, I'll play some.
Okay.
That's what, so you're talking about, see who can I, I'll do a cover of somebody. I didn't even mention British blues. I should have brought that up, you know, of course, a British blues. John Mayall and those guys. I'm trying to think what I want to do here. I could do, I'll do a Robert Johnson song. Since.
There you go.
Well, come on, baby, don't you wanna go? Come on, baby, don't you wanna? What I want us to do, to just for it. Come on, baby, let's hit it right now. Come on, baby, don't you want to know?
Question in there. Do you use the finger pluck technique, or is there a different type of technique that you use to play?
I kind of use some finger pluck. I use picking a finger plucking. I like if I do what I'm doing. Because I have to skip straight because I use a finger pluck right there. And that's a pick.
Well, it definitely makes for a great sound doing that. It was noticed in the chat room, and the question was if you finger plucked, so he caught that. But, of course, Ghostman was in a band himself, he said, for 12 years, and was telling me some interesting stuff while you were playing earlier. I believe he said he actually played on stage with you, too, back in the 80s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's
He said one song in front of 80,000 people. Can you imagine?
I played, when I played with Larry, I did a couple of shows with him at festivals. He was on main stage, and I played in front of maybe 30,000.
Wow.
So, but he's got me beat if he did 80,000. That's
Well,
one thing I noticed on stage like that. Excuse me. I'd rather play in front of 30,000 than 30, because 30,000 you don't see their faces, and 30 you do.
Yep. Well, I have a request from the chat room. They want to know if you would play Stairway to Heaven.
Oh, are you serious?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I play part of it. what I'm going to do. Kind of unwritten rule of guitar players, you know.
Right.
No Stairway. No, it's like, no Stairway, no Freebird.
Aww.
That's... But, that sounds like my computer when it comes on, it does it. But that's pretty cool. But, anyway, I'm having a good time. I wish I was in the chat room. I don't know if I can get in there or not.
No, everybody's enjoying it. They're having a good time. And what about other songs? Is there any other type of songs that from any other artists, minus Stairway to Heaven?
Like non-blues artists?
Yeah.
I like Townes Van Zandt.
Could you play us something from them that you like, one of your favorites?
Townes Van Zandt, have you ever heard the song Poncho and Lefty?
Yes.
That's the Townes Van Zandt song.
Love that song.
He wrote that and Willie Nelson did it.
Oh.
Actually, he did. But this is a song he wrote that not many people know. But.
Knew any of the old Elvis songs in particular. And what about some of his gospel stuff as well?
Well, I don't do any of his gospel. His gospel stuff was, I couldn't sing it if I had to. But I knew this one. Let's see. I used to do this in my band, if I remember it. Well, now, that's all right, Mom. That's all right with you. That's all right, Mom. That's all right. Well, that's all right now, Mama. throw you in there.
Had happy birthday sung to me in Elvis style.
Oh,
yeah, hippie, and I know that you're going to be doing a show in Hippie Nation soon. But they had me come on; I had to be in there that day, and he sung happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me as Elvis.
Oh,
yeah. You did a good job.
Oh yeah, you did a great job.
You know,
Gibby.
Oh yeah, he's great.
He's funny.
Ken, I live in Virginia, and we have. I live in Virginia, and Williamsburg, Virginia, and here we have Busch Gardens, and during the summer it's called Summer Nights, and they book different. You know, solo artists, bands that travel, and I was thinking of you when you know, it hit me. Summer Nights, you know, that would be something. It would be nice if, you know, somehow they could hear you and bring you to Williamsburg to play, and it's a huge field. The stage is in the back, and it's all lit up with different color lights and everything. And they bring in surprise artists, you know, people that aren't expecting someone to come in and play and everything. And then they have what's called the barbecue summer nights, and they hold a huge outdoor barbecue, and the artist is up on the stage and performing. And I was thinking of you while you were playing, because I thought he'd be great. He'd be great at summer night.
I'd love to do that. That'd be so cool. But yeah, Karen, line that up for me, Karen.
I'll see what I can do. I'm actually, everybody, if anybody wants Ken, just contact me. Find me on Facebook. My email is greeneyedlady355@yahoo, because I'm doing his booking for him. We had a request for All Shook Up.
No, I don't know the words to All Shook Up. I know part of it.
Okay, part of it would be good.
I'm all shook up. I thought it was. You know, one thing that I found that I kind of find humorous whenever I play shows, I've had people request everything from me. Mm-hmm. And they think, because I'm a musician, I automatically know every song ever written.
Right.
And it's like, you know, I've actually told people I don't know that. Why don't you know that? You're the band. You're supposed to know that song. I said, I don't know every song ever written, for goodness sake. Well, you better learn it next time you're here, because I'm going to ask you to play it. And I said, you know, okay, whatever. I rarely do. If someone asks me nicely, I will. But if someone asks me with an attitude, I just don't do it.
Oh, wow. Well, I think what we'll do is we're going to run for another 6 minutes.
Okay.
And everybody's enjoying having fun listening to you tonight, so we're going to have to reschedule and have you come back and sing.
I'm having a blast. I'd like to. They can get my CD from, if they want to contact me, they can go to kentucker.weebly.com.
Wow.
It's kentucker.weebly.com. Mm-hmm. Or you can find me on Facebook. I have two profiles. One is my CD cover. If you try to add that one, I have too many friends that won't let you probably. But if you go to the other one, there's a CD cover that says Larry Norman across the top, and I'm on that CD cover. That's, you can add me on that one. Just put Ken Tucker Blues in a Facebook search, and you'll probably find me pretty quick.
Okay, sounds good. We are getting one more request for you to play your favorite song.
Okay. My favorite song. Let's see. That's kind of hard to discern. I mean, I play a song I like here. I'll play the song the first blues song I ever heard. And this is the one I told you about. She called the Katie. I heard on the Blues Brothers. She called the Katie and gave me a new ride. She called the Katie and gave me a new ride.
In the chat room, but non, she wanted to know, or no, Ghostman, I'm sorry, excuse
okay.
me. He wanted to know if you knew any reggae with a blues mix.
Reggae with a blues mix? You mean, do I play it or do I know any of it?
Do you, well, I guess play or no.
I can play a little bit of, I Shot the Sheriff, you know, like, I know the, let's see here. I just can't do it. I mean, there's a feel I haven't got. Reggae is a whole another bag of worms, man. That's not, you gotta, it's just, it's. I can't do it. I mean, I know a little bit of it, but. I really can't pull it off. And mm-hmm. I can't pull it off and make it sound authentic. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I respect those reggae guys. Man, that stuff's so hard. And it sounds so easy, but it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I have listened to, when I worked at Opryland, we would have them come in, and they would, weekly, would come in and play in the atrium. And, oh, my God, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. So, but it does. It takes a lot of talent and a lot of work to, I think, to be able to do that, because I've stood and watched them, you know.
Well, to do any music well.
Right.
I mean, any music. I don't think there's any particular, I don't think there's one particular music genre that's easier than another.
Right.
It's just what you know. And I can't play classical, but I don't think a classical player could do what I do.
No, you're right.
No, because it's just, there are certain elements to each style of music that you have to really master, and in some cases you let some of them go to master the other. And in the case of the blues, technical prowess is secondary to the soul and the spirit and the energy of the music itself. Whereas
right.
classical, the technical side is the important thing, and it takes precedence over soulfulness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people have found a way to blend the two, but that's pretty rare.
That's true.
Honestly, mm-hmm. I'd rather hear a George Thorogood guitar solo that's just, you know, or maybe like old Hound Dog Taylor. He was a slide player, and his stuff was like, it was crazy. It's that crazy, you know, but it was something just electric and magical about it. And he was just smiling and stomping his feet when he was playing, and he'd go on incoherently. And it was just beautiful. And I'd rather listen to that than a symphony. I really would.
Wow. Well, do you want to take us out with a song? And with a song, I want to.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I want to thank everybody for coming in tonight and joining us. We will get Ken back on at a later date, and we'll do a full 2-hour show, and we'll let him play. So, take us out, Ken, and everybody have a great evening.
Good night.
Here we go. Well, they call me the doctor. I'm going to make you feel all right. Well, they call me a doctor. I'm gonna make you feel alright. Well, I got your prescription, and it's time of day or night. Well, they call me a doctor. I'm gonna get your prescription filled.